Welcome to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe podcast. My name is Mike Quackenbush. Joining me on the program is Clayton Morris. It is typically the two of us on this program, and this Friday it will be the two of us going to see The Dark Knight Rises.
I'm starting to get that excitement level that I haven't yet reached for this movie, and I'm starting to hit that. Now, you said there was like a 13-minute thing on. I couldn't find this thing. It was like a 13-minute, what, trailer or like behind the scenes about it?
There is a 13-minute featurette of sorts, kind of like a making of and an introduction to some of the primary characters, you know, in case you've never heard of Batman or that sort of thing, that was floating around out there. I don't know if it was screened at Comic-Con, but it was on sites like SuperheroHype.com.
Okay, so it was professionally made by like Warner Brothers or something.
Yes, yeah, okay. It's a real thing, and I guess, you know, this week, some of the last-minute little bits to try and get people excited, like that Batmobile documentary that's on tonight.
Oh, yeah, that's tonight.
Yeah, don't miss out on that. All of that leading into the midnight release late Thursday, of course, early Friday morning, of the 2-hour and 45-minute running time. That's the final call there. For The Dark Knight Rises, which is intended to be the last installment of the Christopher Nolan trilogy, although both Nolan and Christian Bale have said they'd be open to doing a fourth one if the story were right.
Oh, Nolan said so?
Yes, he did.
Oh, I didn't hear that one.
He also said that he will have nothing to do with the Justice League movie.
Right, that was the news of the week, right?
Shepherding the Superman movie. He kind of plays like a weird supervisory role on The Man of Steel, which comes out next summer, as do some other at least two more Marvel films. Is The Wolverine next summer also? There's two more Avengers family films next summer.
I think you're right, because that's the one they've already shot it, right? They shot most of it in Japan. Mm-hmm. So I think that's got to be ready for prime time.
I'm going to look that up right now.
Yeah, so you and I are going to go see this in IMAX, and a lot of people say now, you know, you're going to see it in 3D. No. Well, you and I are going to see it in IMAX because over an hour of the film was shot for IMAX, so we'll see that. We're not going to see it in 3D because it was not shot for 3D. And also, 3D movies tend to look like crap. Mm-hmm. They tend to be, too dark and just not well done. So not really worth seeing in 3D. So save your money on that one.
Right on. The Wolverine is upcoming from Marvel next summer. So there are two Avengers family films next summer, as well as The Wolverine, which stars Hugh Jackman, as it would probably be all but impossible to imagine anyone else in that role now. That's in July 26, 2013. The Wolverine is out.
Yeah, I couldn't think of another person playing Wolverine at this point. I think Hugh Jackman does such a great job playing that role. Mm-hmm. I watched Wolverine, or X-Men Origins Wolverine. It has been on, I don't know if it's TNT or one
Spike.
Of those.
Yeah, I think Spike's been rerunning it.
So I've been catching that. I've seemed like I've watched it twice in the past couple of weeks, or at least portions of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not good. Mm-hmm. It's really not.
Correct.
It's really not good. I don't know why just because it's X-Men, just because it's superheroes, I just kind of get roped in and I end up watching it in the background while I'm doing something on my laptop or something. But it's not entertaining. There are a few scenes that are fun, but for the most part, that whole blob scene really drives me nuts.
Yeah.
Whether the boxing ring thing. And
yeah, like it's cool to see some of the other characters, but I don't know. Wolverine is not the most compelling X-Men by far, in my opinion. And while I really do like Hugh Jackman in that role, like that's really the reason I would go, because I like Hugh Jackman in that role. I don't care for Wolverine. Like, some of the other characters they kind of assembled around him. And yeah, it was kind of cool to see Gambit on the screen.
But, you and I think, are cut from the same cloth when it comes to some of these popular characters. And I'm not sure why this is that we have this. Or what about our personalities keeps us away from liking certain characters? You and I think we could agree, we're not into the character Cable.
Right.
You and I were not fans of Wolverine. I mean, he was such an immensely popular character among kids, right? You know, young boys, when Wolverine sort of really came into popularity, maybe like in the mid-90s, early 90s. You know, he was everywhere. Didn't they have like 10 books with him on the cover?
Right. It was ridiculous. Like Wolverine just, I think it had to do with too, like you and I, our comic book diets were fairly similar. So we grew up with like a Marvel universe that was Spider-Man dominant. You know, we read Amazing and Spectacular and Web of Spider-Man. He was in Marvel Team-Up. He'd show up everywhere, and we were all right with that. But then when the X-Men became the most popular Marvel franchise overall, it seemed like they needed to pick one character from that and make him the focal point, and they chose Wolverine. So Wolverine was in two or three different X-Men books. He was always the lead story in Marvel Comics Presents, which was like a biweekly anthology series. He had guest appearances in every stinking book you could think of. Like, you know what I mean? He'd be over here in Ghost Rider. He'd show up in Daredevil. Any dumb place that could have Wolverine show up because he would bump sales.
Didn't he even appear in Power Pack?
I'm sure.
I can swear I remember the cover of that issue of him in Power Pack. And right. There was, or maybe it was Alpha Flight.
He definitely, because he's Canadian, he definitely shows up in Alpha Flight.
Yeah. You
know, Alpha Flight had to be one of the bottom-selling books, like always, for Marvel. So it felt like Wolverine was being, like, rammed down our throat. And so
what about, I'm curious, because, you know, I didn't mind him as much as you did. He's not as compelling as some other characters were for me. And I was a much bigger Spider-Man fan, and Batman, of course, you know, in the DC world, I was a huge Batman fan. But what about Wolverine rubs you the wrong way? I'll see if it jives with what it does for me.
Well, I think two things. One is, one of my very favorite Marvel characters is Cyclops. And Wolverine is always like his antagonist.
Right.
So I immediately dislike him. My very favorite X-Men is the Angel. And like one of the first books I had was a classic X-Men, which is like a reprint series where they'd get Art Adams to do like a gorgeous cover for an old issue of X-Men that had like crappy Dave Cockrum art inside. And then they'd add a new backstory. So you'd get like a reprint of a classic issue of X-Men and then like maybe like an 8-page backup story. And the first one of those that I ever read was like Wolverine beating up the Angel, like the whole in the backstory. And I'm like, this is the guy that it like antagonizes my favorite X-Men characters. Like I dislike him immediately.
Mm-hmm.
I also dislike the fact that he was, at the time we were reading, he was maybe like the only Marvel character that would just kill people all the time. And that was like really like an affront to sort of like the overall morality of comic books. The heroes did not kill.
Right.
The heroes went to incredible lengths. Right. Exactly. But they would go to crazy lengths not to kill someone. Whereas Wolverine, do you remember this? It was crazy. Like when the first Wolverine solo series came out, not the limited series from 82.
Right.
But like his ongoing series that started in like 88 or 89, where he assumed this alter ego called Patch. And he was like a loner in this fictional town of Madripoor, which, I don't know, always vaguely seemed to, like, it was meant to imply Singapore is what I took away from it. In that first issue, he kills like 90 people. Like, it's a ridiculous body count. It forced me to pass the point of my ability to suspend my disbelief. Like, you mean to tell me in this space of time that Wolverine was on these four missions with the X-Men? He briefly joined the Fantastic Four here, helped Power Pack here, cleaned up Hell's Kitchen for Daredevil while he was hurt here, and then went to the other side of the planet, to this fictional place, Madripoor, and hung out there for a few weeks and killed a bunch of people.
Right.
And that all happened before, like, the next issue of X-Factor came out? Like, I don't know that I believe that.
Yeah. Something about him just being, I don't know, is it safe to call him one-dimensional?
Well, I don't know. I think it depends on who wrote him.
True. And I guess they tried to, even in the Wolverine movie, I felt like there were deeper layers than there were in some of the comic book issues, right? He was a guy that had animanium wrapped around his bones. He didn't know his past, and he was gruff, right?
Yeah.
He sort of struck me as sort of like a Han Solo, you know, mm-hmm. just sort of one-dimensional. And maybe that's what rubbed me the wrong way about him as a character. And that's sort of how I felt about, you know, Cable or some of these other characters that came along and were, you know, should have been hugely popular for us, right? They came along and all these other people were excited about them. But you and I, we just never, like the Punisher.
Yes.
I think you and I are also similar in that way. We didn't, you know, we never cared about the Punisher.
Right.
And I think Wolverine and the Punisher, to me, they're one and the same.
Yeah, they were kind of like guys that were unjustly popular, in our opinion, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, the Punisher, too, is kind of like, you know, he's another one that kills people wantonly. And I think because I was really enamored of like Batman and the fact that he really did operate on a code.
Right.
You know, like he had his own code and he stuck to it. And like, although this never would happen with the cooperation of two separate comic book companies that have to maintain their own universes, like I always kind of felt like Batman is the ultimate superhero in that, you know, he doesn't have powers and yet he can hold his own against anybody. And like, if it came down to it, Batman would wipe the floor with the Punisher, you know,
right?
Like the Punisher wouldn't stand a chance against Batman. You know, Batman is like the thinking man's hero, right? He's a detective. Given the opportunity to prepare, like he does famously in that brief series that ran for a year in the Jim Lee-drawn Batman book called Hush. Like, even prepared, Batman takes out Superman. Like, there's you can't, unless you get the drop on Batman somehow, like Prometheus did in that Justice League Grant Morrison story, which was really well done. No one gets the better of Batman. Like, that's his shtick. And the Punisher, I don't know if he struck me as being like it was he was lazily constructed or what, but like, yeah, I really resented like the Punisher and Wolverine's popularity. And then the next couple Flavor of the Month characters that came along like that, although Wolverine and Punisher had more than a month, Cable was
right.
Definitely one of them, right? He was a Rob Liefeld creation at the time when people really thought Rob Liefeld was a great artist. Like, he was the central figure in a cool book with a hot artist. Cable should have been awesome. And he did have an interesting backstory, right? Like, this is Cyclops' son from the future. He's
right.
Old. Like, he's older than Cyclops because of where he left the time stream. And, you know, how did he get here? Who is his mother? How does he relate to this character Strife, who was like the early antagonist for Cable and all this? But Cable was, he was just like another dude with a huge gun.
Right, with a cigar.
Yeah, or like, you know, he kind of had like the one bionic eye, or like, he
had a scar down his face, and he had a vest. He had like a utility vest, right?
You could
keep like fishing gear in there, like a pocket knife.
He had like a blue Scotty vest from the future.
Right.
Yeah, I was like, Cable. And it was the same. Like, there were a couple other characters that came along, like Bishop was one
Bishop,
of them.
Bishop, yeah, that's another one.
Like, Bishop should have been really cool.
Because I remember one of the iconic, was it a Captain America? I'm trying to recall what series this happened in. I believe it was Captain America in the 80s when, you know, because people didn't kill people in comic books, but when you had this incredible issue where you had, was it Scourge, wiped out and killed like 30-some low-level villains in that one room? Was it a Captain America issue?
Yes, you're absolutely right. Scourge mostly appeared in Captain America.
And he mowed down all those people at that bar with that machine gun and killed all those villains. Like, that was such a memorable issue, right? I mean, it was this thing that just does not happen in comic books. And so, yeah, then when you had this shift towards Wolverine, you know, wantonly slaughtering people, it just didn't feel right. Obviously, you had this in some of the indie books, right, that were coming out at the time, but it just didn't feel like it was part of the Marvel DC universe. And maybe it was something left over from the sort of comics code era of ethics, but you know, there were also some villains that I think you and I were. Oh, I know there were. I mean, for me in the Spider-Man universe, there's for me it's like there's the eras, right? There's like the pre Gwen Stacy death time, which was like the golden age, right, for Spider-Man. You know, I think before 100 issues, and then you got like the Venom era, which is when I sort of started to lose, you know, interest. And you had like the Venom era. And then it moved into the ridiculousness of Carnage.
Yeah.
And, you know, Carnage was hugely popular among the kids, right?
I think it still is. Sure.
Really? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I was never interested in those. I mean, those were, to me, they just didn't seem right. Like, I was a bigger fan of, like, the 1960s and 70s Spider-Man when I'm dealing with villains like Sandman and the Vulture and the Sinister Six, you know.
Sure. I agree. Like, the Silver Age villains are, like, immortal to me. But the Bronze Age villains, you know, like Venom and Carnage are the perfect example. And it is a generational thing. I know this because there's been a lot of talk lately around Chikara Wrestle Factory, which is the pro wrestling training school that I operate, because everyone went to see The Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say all the guys that are at least 4 years or more younger than me, all they ever want is for Venom to show up in a Spider-Man movie. They're dying for Venom to show up and be done right. And, like, I could care less. Like, if I made you a list of the 20 villains I want to see in a Spider-Man sequel, Venom is not on that list. And certainly not Carnage.
Right.
I don't care about that character. He doesn't resonate with me at all. And I think that's what it was. Like, when we got in and really got heavy into the books, everyone that had come before was, like, established canon. Like, they had backstory. They had legacy. Like, when they showed up, the editors would put, like, a footnote with an asterisk telling you, like, oh, we haven't seen him since issue, you know, 229. And you're like, oh, wow, like, this guy's been around for a while. Whereas the newly introduced characters, and these are all characters that came after you and I were really deep into it, right? Cable, Bishop, Venom, Carnage. I don't care about them. Like, you could put them on a holographic cover. I wouldn't buy it. I don't care.
And I think it's same true of, like, some of the indie books that came out at the time, too. Remember Todd McFarlane, of course, creating Spawn. I never cared.
Exactly. Yeah, it didn't matter that the art was great. I'm sure it was. But, like, I didn't care about those. When Image happened, I could have cared less.
And I felt like Archangel was even an attempt to take a character that we loved.
Hmm.
You were a much bigger Angel fan than I was, but I loved that character and then turned him into the Archangel, which, you know, that was an interesting turn.
Mm-hmm.
But certainly, you know, with the sharp knifed wings that he had, and it was an effort to, I don't know, metallicize him,
mm-hmm.
you know, in an effort to make him cool like that. I just, yeah, it's funny that there are these characters that these kids love. I mean, and Venom in the film, like Venom in the third Spider-Man film,
mm-hmm.
you know, I would much rather have had many more interactions with Sandman
mm-hmm.
than having him be the sort of low-tier character villain in that film and Venom be the focus.
Right. Yeah, I think it depends a lot, obviously, on the writing team. You know, it was the husband and wife duo of Walt and Louise Simonson that were helming X-Factor at the time when they did the bit where they wanted to convince you. Walter was the artist, and his wife, Louise, sometimes called Wheezy, wrote X-Factor during what I think was its master run in the late 80s, early 90s. One of my very favorite comic books of all time. And Louise had remarked, I think I read this in Marvel Age, which was like a weird magazine kind of thing that Marvel used to put out that previewed all their books, that Louise felt like the Angel was the most boring member of the X-Men. Like, all he does is fly. And he needed to have something to make him more interesting, more relatable. And if you remember, it was in X-Factor 14 or 15 where they made it look as if he'd killed himself. He lost his wings in the Fall of the Mutants. They were impaled on a sewer wall, became infected, and then they amputated his wings.
Right.
So he couldn't even fly. The thing that made him the Angel was gone. And then they led you to believe that he killed himself. And then what happened was that Apocalypse, you know, transformed him into this other character, which is much darker and edgier, which was kind of the trend in comic books post Frank Miller's Dark Knight, you know, that everything became a little darker and grittier.
Right.
But it was really compelling because I thought that was one of the first times I ever wrote a letter into a comic book, was because I couldn't believe that they had killed off my favorite character. You know, I was furious.
And that famous issue cover, right, where it shows the Angel falling out of the sky with a big no smoking sign through the middle of him.
Right, yeah, the circle slash, like he's one of the Ghostbusters, which was weirdly apropos given the that whole thing in X-Factor where they faked being mutant hunters. They were like the mutant Ghostbusters.
Right.
Yeah, you know, it just seemed like kind of like a topical thing, and I really did enjoy it. Like, I think I was so happy that they hadn't taken the character away, that when they brought him back 9 issues later, I was really thrilled to have the character back. And he's gone through a number of bizarre transformations over the years since then. And
yeah, where is he now? What is he doing now?
Now I couldn't really tell you because I don't really keep up with the books. But for a while, like his metallic wings, like they fell off, and inside they had been regrowing his organic wings for years.
Hmm.
And so he went back to having like the feathered Angel wings that you kind of associate with him, but his skin stayed light blue, which it seems like half the X-Men are blue.
Right.
But, yeah, I really did like that. And one of the things I really did love about that, I think it was Inferno, which was like the next big X-Men crossover story that happened after Fall of the Mutants.
Mm-hmm.
Archangel like kicks Wolverine's butt. And I thought that was great. Like, I thought that was so long in coming. That was one of the most satisfying things ever.
What was unsatisfying, though, was in the X-Men film. You know, he's like the young guy
mm-hmm.
in the film. And
He has like 3 minutes of screen time. But in the trailers, you thought he'd be the emphasis.
Right. Yeah. And then he, you know, breaks out of the... There's only like one or two cool scenes with him, like leaving the hospital, his wings bust out, and he escapes and, you know, carries his dad out the window or whatever it is. But
right.
I don't know. I thought the emphasis in those films wasn't on the proper characters, but it's sort of circle. We've come full circle. You know, the emphasis in those films is on Wolverine.
Yeah.
Instead of where you and I would have liked to have seen it, which, you know, I was always a big Iceman fan too, and so I think even he gets downplayed in those films.
Definitely. Now, as we talk about characters that don't really resonate, I'm going to tell you a little bit about what Marvel has upcoming as part of their MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe. That is to say, the movies that all can be tied together because they're all under one umbrella.
Should we take a moment? Yeah, you want to pause first, and then we'll come back to that in a second?
All right, if you so wish. This is a fine time for us to talk about one of our great show sponsors. They are one of the longest tenured sponsors we have here at the network. We are able to deliver all these great podcasts to you virtually one a day, right? I mean, all the time we're cranking out new stuff at grizzlyproductions.tv, and that is made possible thanks to gazelle.com.
Indeed. These folks will take your used electronics off of you. If you're like Mike, if you're like me, you've probably got like an old phone in a drawer or an old camera somewhere, and you don't know you're busy, right? You don't have time to, what are you going to do? Put this up on eBay? You've got a family to run. You got a job to keep. What are you going to do? So Gazelle makes it so simple for you to make some cash from these used electronics, because let's be honest, they're not increasing in value, right? Like, it's like you drive a car off the lot, it decreases in value the moment you get off the lot. So that's kind of how Gazelle operates. So if you've got an old laptop, you've got an old camera, you got an old Apple smartphone, an old Android smartphone laying around your house, and you want to upgrade, or you just want to get some cash on your hands for this summer, go to gazelle.com. You type in what you have. Let's say you've got the Nokia Lumia 900. Which is that Windows phone. You type that in and you say, hey, you know, I want to sell this thing. I want to wait for get a new Android phone. Okay, they'll tell you how much they're going to give you for it. They'll pay the shipping. You mail it off in a box that they'll even provide for you. So you don't have to pay the shipping. You don't have to do any of that. They'll email you every step of the way to say, hey, we received your box. We received your phone. We're checking it out. And a day later, you'll probably receive an email that says, hey, everything checks out and your payment is on your way. They'll PayPal you a payment. They'll even send over or you can get an Amazon gift card, which will give you an additional 5% back. We love them a whole lot. They are fantastic, and they'll even wipe your data for you if you forget. So you forget to reset your phone to factory settings on your phone, whatever, they'll clean it off for you. And there was actually a recent study that found that of all the companies that claim to do this, Gazelle is the only one that had like a 100% rating when it came to wiping your data. So go to gazelle.com and get some cash for your used electronics. And when you're checking out, tell them you heard about them from Grizzly Productions. We appreciate it.
Right on. Right on. So as I was saying, here's what is upcoming from the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Next year, we get Iron Man 3. Which is
next year, wow.
Right, that's in May. And as far as I know, that's the last of the planned Iron Man solo films, because the following year, the plan is that the Avengers sequel would be out. Also, next year, but later in the year, in November, is Thor: The Dark World. That exact title, I believe, was only just made public last week at Comic-Con.
Do we know what the premise of the film is going to be?
I don't.
We don't know. Obviously, if you've seen the Avengers, you know in that final, that extra scene. Mm-hmm. Refresh my memory. We saw, who did we see in the extra scene?
Avengers? Thanos?
Thanos, right. So there was some speculation that Thanos would not be a part of the next Avengers film, but might make his appearance in the next Thor film.
Well, I certainly think they're going to spend time building up whoever the antagonist is going to be, in the same way that they built up Loki before you got to the Avengers.
Right.
So I would imagine you're going to see Thanos, or at least his emissaries, playing some kind of role in all the other Avengers family films. In 2014, in April, which is because they've now officially released this, April 4th, 2014, Captain America: The Winter Soldier will be released, has led people to believe that, in fact, The Avengers 2 will not arrive until the following year, 2015. But this is what I wanted to talk about. Now, we're talking about characters that don't necessarily resonate with mainstream audiences. It also has become official that before the second Avengers movie, they will release an Ant-Man film.
Ah, sweet.
And you and I, of course, I think are very happy about that. I like the Hank Pym character. And apparently it will be the Hank Pym Ant-Man that's in this. Of course, he's also Giant Man. He's Yellow Jacket, which is my favorite incarnation of his. He's Goliath. He's a bunch of different things. He's Hank Pym. Edgar Wright is helming the Ant-Man film, which Walt Disney Studios, which is overseeing the MCU now, is saying will precede the Avengers sequel. But that is not the only thing in the MCU. This is a bit of an expansion, and this is not an Avengers film. Is Guardians of the Galaxy will release on August 1st, 2014. And there were a lot of rumors going around at Comic-Con about this, and as I was kind of following the news that was trickling in from Comic-Con, I was stunned at how many people were talking about Guardians of the Galaxy, because that is a real D-lister team, any way you slice it. Like, they probably have less market appeal than the Defenders, less than the New Mutants, less than the West Coast Avengers. The Guardians of the Galaxy are maybe just, they're down there by Alpha Flight.
It's funny that you mentioned the Defenders, because that's immediately who I thought. I was even thinking, man, the Defenders would probably be a more popular choice to make a film about. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see that. I mean, I couldn't believe that this... this came out of Comic-Con, because now, so do we know, do we know, we have a timetable though, right? Is it 20, what year did you say, Guardians of the Galaxy?
It will release to theaters August 1st, 2014.
Do we know the lineup? Is there going to be the classic lineup? Do
no,
we know?
It is not. It is the 2008 Guardians of the Galaxy, which is the current book, which is Star-Lord, Drax the Destroyer, which is kind of an old character that they've revamped, Gamora, Rocket Raccoon, who's like a 70s Mort that I can't believe that they're including, and Groot. These characters, I was surprised while this was going on. I actually noticed there was a Guardians of the Galaxy toy pack at Target. And I thought,
what?
What?
Really?
Like, there was a Fantastic Four, like, four-figure toy pack, and then right next to it was Guardians of the Galaxy. And, like, I couldn't believe that.
Now, I do remember, I mean, this is, like, keeping in that sort of space realm stuff. And I know Guardians of the Galaxy, they have some run-ins with Thanos, so maybe that'll be tied in there somehow.
Mm-hmm.
But I just can't see, really, are you going to muddy the water at all? Are you going to have any bleed over from these into the Avengers? I mean, who wants to see a raccoon with a machine gun? You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to see a raccoon with a machine gun next to Captain America.
Mm-hmm.
It always seemed like a separate universe to me. You know, just don't mix the two. I don't know. And are you bothered, though, that they're not going with, like, the 60s version of Guardians of the Galaxy?
Right. Or like, I kind of remember fondly reading when they revamped the Guardians of the Galaxy in the 90s and Jim Valentino was the artist. Like, to me, that's, like, the definitive group with, you know, Martin X and Nikki 27 or Charlie 27, whatever. You know, like, those characters are the ones that I kind of... remember as being the classic Guardians of the Galaxy, but this is like the more current version, and apparently they do have a really good cult following, but stuns me that this is what they're going with. Like, the Marvel Universe is so vast.
Wasn't there a Yellow Jacket in that too?
Oh boy.
I thought there was another... It wasn't Hank Pym Yellow Jacket.
But there was that female Yellow Jacket for a while.
That's
right. Yeah. Right around that same time. You know what I mean? Like, when Solo Avengers was still in print, and that was right around the same time as Guardians of the Galaxy got relaunched.
Well, and the thing is, though, I mean, they're far in the future, right? I mean, this isn't current. I mean, it's not current Marvel. Or, I mean, it's not present day, right? So you could get away with this being some sort of intergalactic movie. And there might be enough people out there who would be interested to see it, but it might be one of these little niche movies. But I just don't see them. I'm just curious why they'd want to waste their time.
Right. Well, one thing that maybe will tie this into the Avengers is one of the ones that's been picked for the film that they've said she's in the film is Gamora, who is Thanos' daughter.
Hmm.
So whether or not that's going to tie in or not, but I have to admit that something I think would be kind of cool would be if Thanos shows up and just kills them all in the movie. Like, that Guardians of the Galaxy is really a Thanos movie to make him into a threat for the Avengers.
Yeah, it could be. Right? And then he's going to time travel or something? I don't know.
Well, Guardians of the Galaxy, I don't think, is necessarily in the future, right?
See, I always thought they were. I thought it was, like, something ridiculous, like the 28th century or something like
that. I think some versions of them may have been that way. You know, they could bounce back and forth in time, but I think it was more that it was just like an outer space story.
Hmm. Okay. Well, I'm not terribly excited about that.
Right. It's a really strange choice. Like, clearly they waited till, you know, the right moment. to unveil this at Comic-Con.
I'm going
to
throw this out there, America. I think it would be really awesome if they decided to bring back and do like a Marvel team-up movie series.
Hmm.
Think about that, right? Yeah. Standalone Marvel team-up series, much like the comic book. And they just sort of pick and choose what characters they want to try out and put on the screen. They don't have to spend all this time worrying about assembling a team like the Avengers. They want to do a Spider-Man, Iceman movie. Mm-hmm. Go ahead. They want to test out and do some other team up. They can. I would love to see that. I would love to see them be able to play with some of these characters we don't get to see, like a Hawkeye. I don't know. Hawkeye, Cyclops. Team up. Mm-hmm. Who knows?
Yeah, I think if they can do them on small budgets, I think that's the real trick of it overall.
Like Human Torch, do some Human Torch Hulk stuff. Because that's the thing.
That's going to be the trick, right? With the Human Torch, I think a lot of people kind of remember Chris Evans as that character. And they did, during Comic-Con week, I think they came out and announced who was directing the Fantastic Four reboot. So clearly that's in the works too, but now that's outside what we're calling the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe, because that property is not under the Disney Marvel thing right now, right? They're over at Fox.
Hmm. So, well, and that's interesting. Again, I mean, are they going to bring those guys back again, or are they starting fresh? I mean, I hope they start.
It's a complete
fresh.
Reboot. Complete Good. Reboot. So I would imagine that's the end of that.
I'm curious about the Hulk here, because to me that's the wild card in all of this. He made the Avengers film. I mean, I'm sorry. He was the real highlight of that film for me. Mm-hmm. And I was pleasantly surprised that I enjoyed the Hulk that much in this film. Mm-hmm. And I thought Mark Ruffalo did a great job. But I thought the graphics were finally at a stage when he looked realistic.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the first time that we got to see the Hulk done right, with a touch of humor, etc. Why not bring and try another Hulk film? Did they just have such a sour taste in their mouth about that?
I don't know. A couple of the reviews I read after the Avengers came out said, this is the secret to the Hulk. Small doses.
Hmm.
And maybe Marvel's really taking that to heart, because they put two really big budget Hulk movies out there that really didn't perform to their expectations. And, I think we talked about this on a previous Grizz, too, about the way the Hulk was always positioned as like the number two Marvel character behind Spider-Man during right. the era when the Bill Bixby, Lou Ferrigno show was on TV. Hmm. Because there was not an overwhelming abundance of superhero media then. But there is now. And I think audiences are demanding a little bit more than the Hulk, who at times, I think, can be quite flat.
Right. So is there a way to make him interesting? Right. We know the origin of the Hulk now. We don't have to retell that story again. We're past that
right.
in the MCU, the Marvel Cinematic Universe era. So now it could be, because both of the films were origin stories.
Yeah.
Essentially, right? I mean,
yeah.
Am I wrong about that? Or did we... was the...
Well, they did... I mean, they flashed back and retold it in the Edward Norton one.
Right.
I thought the Edward Norton one got out of the gate a lot better than the Ang Lee one did. But
sure.
Even so, I think the fear is, now you've got yet another Banner, right? It's Mark Ruffalo. Are they going to feel like, well, we got to go back and tell this all over again? Like, oh, God. Like... We do not need another retelling of the Hulk.
Right. I wonder if there's something interesting they could do with that character, though. I mean, and maybe where you could actually make it successful by having like a Thor tie-in. Thor makes an appearance. Iron Man pops up, makes an appearance. Almost do these sort of right. small Marvel team-up versions. And who knows? Maybe the Hulk will pop up in some of these other films. Thor film, Iron Man. Maybe that's how we'll get some small doses of the Hulk over the next few years.
Right. Well, at the end of the Avengers, Banner leaves with Stark. They've even set that up during, he's like, you should come over and play in my R&D department and that sort of thing. And they really seem to be the two that get along the best
right.
throughout the movie, right? They have this kind of like, funny relationship where they kind of poke at each other and that sort of thing. And so maybe for all we know that the Hulk will be a major player in Iron Man 3. We don't really know.
It's kind of cool that Robert Downey Jr. has been embracing the whole Iron Man thing as much as he has. Because did you hear that he, I think the news like last night was that he popped up. He showed up at Comic-Con.
Mm.
He just like popped up out of nowhere and was just sort of walking around. That was pretty mm-hmm. cool.
Yeah.
A lot of news out of Comic-Con. Maybe we should I have some more we can chat about. Some things I was excited about at Comic-Con. Maybe we should they're sort of not in the Marvel comic universe. So was there any other or cinematic universe stuff? Is there any other Marvel stuff you wanted to touch before we take a break here, and then we'll come back and talk more?
Well, you know, just the last little bits of information that are out there about Iron Man 3. At this point, you know, it's not official. If Mark Ruffalo is showing up as the Hulk, no one seems to know that. But the main antagonist of Iron Man 3 will be the Mandarin, who is, you know, traditionally thought of as like Iron Man's arch nemesis. He's being played by Ben Kingsley. And War Machine Don Cheadle is back as well, reprising his role. Some familiar faces and
a new director. Yeah, so Jon Favreau not directing it this time. Shane Black is directing it.
That's right. Favreau will be producing, and he's back in his role as Happy Hogan, but not directing.
Who is Shane Black? Do we know what else he's directed?
I can tell you this. He's worked on Lethal Weapon and The Last Boy Scout, and the first full film that he directed was Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Hmm. Okay.
So,
I saw that, by the way. Did you see that?
No, I did not. That is the only... Actually, I'm scrolling down here right now. That's the only other full film credit as a director that he has. He's done some acting, producing, and screenwriting on other stuff, though.
Well, it's good to know that Favreau will be there as a producer in a producer role. But I have to say, I was not thrilled with Iron Man 2. So I'm kind of happy that maybe they'll turn it over. They're turning it over to someone who has a bit of a darker edge to his directorial skills. Mm-hmm. So, you know, not that we need every character to have a darker tone, but I think Iron Man could do well by having less comedy, you know, or less joke. You know, one of the scenes that really frustrates me, even though I watch it repeatedly, is the scene with Mickey Rourke. Not Mickey Rourke. When they're at in Monaco, the racetrack.
Yeah.
And was that Mickey Rourke?
He is the villain in that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he seemed like... I'm remembering the younger Mickey Rourke, and I'm like, no, it can't be Mickey Rourke of the wrestler fame. But yeah, anyway, so you know that scene where he wants the Iron Man out of the costume, or he wants the Iron Man suitcase, and they're screaming, and you want to like punch Gwyneth Paltrow in the face because she's screaming incessantly, and he's reversing the car. Happy Hogan's like, reversing the car back and forth. But anyway, that just like enough. Just give me the suitcase. It seemed like a slapstick scene of comedy, and it just seemed ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of other scenes like that too that involved like Black Widow, and I don't know. Enough with that. And of course the donut thing. And then remember him dancing in the Iron Man costume?
The donut thing. Yeah, I didn't like the donut.
And the dancing in his apartment for the party with the mat, that was cheesy as hell too. So I could do with a new director in that franchise to spice things up a little bit. So, but anyway, why don't we take a moment here and we'll come back, talk more Comic-Con news, some stuff that was interesting that I thought we should talk about. But first, why don't we thank our new show sponsor, the folks over at Drobo. Mike's going to tell you all about what they have up their sleeve. These guys have done some incredible new stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, our friends formerly known as Data Robotics, now they are simply known as Drobo, because that is the invention with which they are synonymous. It's a backup storage system that protects your entire digital life, and it is the only backup system that I need, and it's the only one you'd need, too. I run the Drobo FS, which is sitting right here next to my tower, constantly backing up all of my digital files, all my video, all my everything you can think of. You can get it to do whatever you want it to. It's incredible. There's no task too big or too small for your Drobo. But the Drobos, I should tell you, are actually getting smaller. So if your workflow, for example, would require you to be able to take all the information from one computer and take it to another work site or take it on the road with you, you need to go over and see Drobo.com right now and read up about the latest and greatest of their gadgets, the Drobo Mini. It's got all the same incredible features, and it's portable. So if you, like Clayton, like myself, if you keep tons of media on your computer that you cannot afford to lose, then you really need to make the investment in a Drobo right now. It protects you entirely against drive failure. I've got 4 1-terabyte drives in here. So even it'd be unthinkable, you know what I mean, that I could actually lose all of my digital files thanks to Drobo. I am always safe, as are all my digital files. Thanks to our great friends and show sponsors over at Drobo. Check them out. They've got a storage solution for you.
Excited to have Drobo on the show. Okay, so some Comic-Con news that is interesting, apart from the Marvel stuff. The Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. Walking Dead, it was announced this week at Comic-Con. They rolled out the 4-minute trailer for Season 3 of The Walking Dead, and it looks incredible. Now, have you started watching Season 1 yet?
I have not. I tell you what, I had that, and I also have some Breaking Bad that I've been meaning to get through. And because I was becoming aware that the new season of Breaking Bad was so imminent,
right,
I started watching Season 4 of Breaking Bad, and I'm 3 episodes into it now. So The Walking Dead will have to wait, because I don't like to mix and match like that.
Yeah. Oh, good. So I'm glad. Yeah, so Breaking Bad Season 5 debuted on Sunday night.
Now, I don't think anyone watched it, which is lucky.
Right.
Because I want to get caught up.
And by the way, we should mention also that Breaking Bad Season 4 now available on Netflix. Of course, they released it. It was available on Sunday, those punks, the same day that Season 5 started. So they didn't waste much time, did they? So now if you want to stream Season 4 of Breaking Bad, you can on Netflix, on your iPad, on your Roku box, wherever you watch Netflix. So anyway, but yeah, Season 3 of The Walking Dead got its trailer debut. And I believe we tweeted it out from the Grizzly Bear Cafe Twitter account. So you can go there and check it out. It is fantastic looking. So, I don't want to ruin it for Mike, because I know he's going to eventually start watching Walking Dead, but most of our audience, and I know many of our audience who listens to the weekly Long Box, of course, those guys cover, they talk every week about, or every time there's a new episode of the Walking Dead. They cover it extensively over there, so you can go listen to that. But I should mention that, you know, the end of the last season, we saw an interesting building emerge. And so if you are familiar with the show, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Well, we now get to see inside of this building, and it looks incredible. And, you know, I just can't wait for this season to start, because I was a little season 2 was great, but I was anxious for them to get moving again. Mm-hmm. And now it looks like we're really kicking in high gear in Season 3. And the tagline for Season 3, which should tell you something about what they uncover and find, because I think you see a helicopter at one point. So you're wondering, well, who the heck is flying a helicopter, right? We don't think there are many other people around. But the tagline for Season 3 is Fear the Living. So that should tell you a little bit about what, the conflict that will emerge in Season 3, and I'm anxious to see how that looks. So it's a 4-minute trailer. It looks action-packed. There are all sorts of things that you weren't expecting to see. And a little surprise from Season 1 that you'll notice in this trailer for Season 3, and I'm very, very excited to see what they do with this character. So a lot of good stuff, and I can't wait till you're able to dive into it so we can chat about it, because I think you will thoroughly enjoy The Walking Dead as well. So now you're 3 episodes into Breaking Bad Season 4. What are your thoughts? Were you surprised at the kickoff to the season? I mean, you and I were speculating as to what happened, right, with the gunshot.
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised at how it unfolded?
I am. I think it's probably almost beside the point to say that Breaking Bad has really deserved its acclaim as being one of the best written dramas on television. And I think the way that they are able to so adeptly manipulate the way you feel about different characters is really testament to that. You know, they really do get you invested in these multifaceted characters of theirs, and the characters sometimes surprise you with what they're capable of and things like that. One of the things that I think has really made me appreciate that, as well as the skill of the entire cast, which is just outstanding, is that perhaps for the first batch of episodes that I'd watched, we watched a couple of the seasons very close together here on The Grizz, is the character Marie, which is Hank Schrader's wife, was probably my least favorite character. I couldn't stand her.
Right.
And she's really changing. The character's really evolving, and she becomes increasingly sympathetic. And I actually found myself rooting for her a little bit, and that's when I realized, I was like, wow, they really were able to get me to do a 180 on this character that I really disliked immensely, and you know, they really do a fantastic job of kind of altering all of that. Consistently, though, I will say this, even though he does things that I think as the viewer you are meant to dislike, Mike, the older guy who's sort of the muscle for Gus, is just outstanding.
Right.
Like, every time that guy shows up, I love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, the other night, when I was in my office over the weekend, I had a few hours before showtime, and there was a few episodes, AMC was playing just a few episodes of season four towards the end of the season. Maybe, like the eighth or ninth episodes or something I caught. And, you know, I'm so excited for you to get to those points when they're dealing with some stuff in Mexico. It's highly entertaining, and just how they weave this story together. And you just don't think that it's going to come together. You're like, how is this going to possibly you're looking at the clock. You're thinking, all right, we've got an hour left in season four. How are they possibly going to do it? Oh, and they do it and they do it well. So, did you see the poster for season five yet?
I think so.
It says All Hail the King. I don't know if you saw the picture of Walter White sitting on like a pile of money. All the buzz. I cannot wait for you to get through the most of season four. How many episodes are in season four?
That is a very good question. I think it's 12? Like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
So something like that. 13 episodes. And I would guess the same is true of season five, unless it's, refresh my memory, is that one of those like super ones where they're going to break it in half and you get like a chunk of them and then you wait a year and then you get the other chunk?
Yeah, I think it'll be like 16.
This is the last one.
I think it's going to be like 16 episodes, 8 and 8. So you'll see season five and then I guess season two, you know, season, what, 5.5? Kind of like what they did with Battlestar.
Right.
Which we'll see next year. So, interesting.
Yeah, now, unlike that, did you see the announcement from Netflix regarding Arrested Development?
That it's begun, yeah. In fact, I saw some tweets from Jason Bateman, and Ron Howard had sent out some tweets that made some news where they were just, Ron Howard said, it's alive! And it was like the first day they all sort of reported for work where they were going to start shooting, like this week. They start shooting Arrested Development, which is exclusively being released on Netflix, of course, next year. And this is, an interesting move for Netflix, right? Because I think, you know, obviously Netflix is the future of television in many ways. And moving away from this DVDs by mail, they don't even do that anymore. It is the idea that if they can throw enough money at creating original series, this will be the way that people maybe be convinced to sort of cut the cable cord, right? Mm-hmm. And if there are enough compelling, I mean, this is what drove HBO. People would get HBO because the shows were so good. Mm-hmm. Like, you wouldn't get HBO so you could watch Superman 1 again. Mm-hmm. People are getting HBO, and the reason it's exploded in such popularity over the past decade or decade and a half is because of, like, the likes of The Sopranos and all this show. I mean, you name it. Deadwood, The Wire, on and on and on. These incredible shows. Curb Your Enthusiasm, stand-up specials, everything. So, Netflix is seeing this as a way for people to, you know, if they can get original news content on there, like a live news broadcast, all those sorts of things. So, yeah, Arrested Development is one of 4 or 5 original series that Netflix is throwing millions of dollars at.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is going to be their marquee property, is Arrested Development. And so Ron Howard tweeted some pictures from their sort of conference room where they had on the wall all these, like, post-it notes storyboarded of how Arrested Development is going to unfold over the season. And he tweeted a picture of, like, you know, Jason Bateman hanging out, and I'm super excited about that.
Yeah. Now, one of the recent developments as it relates to this, Arrested Development's return, is that Netflix is going to release all 10 of the episodes that they've just begun filming at exactly the same time.
Right.
They will not be staggered. So, you know, if you really want to do, if you want to put 10 hours aside on the day that those all drop in early 2013, you can. And that as soon as they finish work on this, which they're calling a mini-series, they go right to work on the movie. So, ideally, the movie will be out sometime in 2013.
That's great. And that's part of their strategy, right? Which is that people don't want to wait, like, with, you know, Breaking Bad season 5. Like, I'm sure, like, when you watched the first few episodes of Breaking Bad season 4, you maybe watched two of them back to back. You know, if you were on the road or something, you had time, you watched two of them, or maybe three of them back to back. I know that my wife would want to watch, you know, Breaking Bad on Netflix. We'd watch like two or three in a row because we just have, you know, we're like, oh my God, we have to see what happens next. So Netflix is doing something, I think, which is brilliant, which is, yeah, releasing them all at once. You want to watch them all at once that night? Great. If not, spread them out over those days, watch them when you want to. Mm-hmm. And that's how people are consuming media these days. So a smart move on their part. So the movie, though, I'm curious how they're going to pull that off. And it'll be interesting to see this show come back, and if they write into it that they, you know, they're all older, mm-hmm. will they take into account, or are they going to pick right up from where the show left off? Do you know what? Do you have any insight into that?
I don't. The only thing as it relates to all of that that I kept hearing was originally they were saying each of the 10 episodes would focus on just one of the characters, and then they later revised that and said, no, they'll be more like the first three seasons of episodes.
Interesting. I'm excited about that. What else? Oh, Ricky Gervais in the works for a new show as well. Have you heard about this?
No.
There's a trailer you can watch. You know, Ricky Gervais has a podcast. Mm-hmm. And it's like a video podcast, so he'll release some videos here and there of just he and Carl Pilkington like driving down the road or, you know, random stuff. And the new Ricky Gervais show, let me see if I can find it. Ricky, it's a new HBO show, I think. Where is it? And he plays, I want to say he plays a guy with a mental handicap. Is the new show, and they're like in a home, like an insane asylum. Carl Pilkington is in it. He plays a character. He plays like a guy with like a big comb over.
Well, he does have a notoriously short attention span, does Ricky Gervais. You know, he tends to do these really neat and tidy, you know, 6 episodes or 10 episodes, and then he moves on to the next thing. You know, I would have loved to have seen more of Extras, or I'm sure everyone would have loved to have seen more of the British version of The Office, but you know, he kind of tells the stories that he wants to tell as succinctly as possible, and he moves on.
Here it is. It's called Derek, is the name of the new show. And apparently he's defending it because it's here, I'll just send you this Time Magazine link. Just because you can see right from this little video link exactly why he would have to defend this, I think. You know, and making fun of people with disabilities is not, you know, is not funny.
Not when other people are listening anyway.
But he's having to defend his new show against these claims of that he's mocking disabilities. Can you see this video clip?
I do. Carl Pilkington looks amazing.
He does. Like, doesn't he look like a science teacher? He's got glasses on, but he's got hair patches on the side. So Ricky Gervais's new show, Derek, is about a simple, this is what it's, the quote, this is what Ricky Gervais says. It's about a simple, vulnerable man working in an old people's home, which sounds innocent enough, but since it's a Gervais production, it's naturally gotten the comedian into some hot water. So BBC News is reporting that Ricky Gervais is being criticized for his portrayal of the title role, Derek, because some say it makes light of people with mental disabilities. Gervais has spoken up, denying that his character has a disability, defending the show. He says, Derek is a fictional character and is defined by his creator, me. If I say that I don't mean him to be disabled, then that's it. A fictional doctor can come along and prove me wrong. So,
and when does this begin? When does the new Ricky Gervais series begin? Do you know?
That's a good question. I felt like it was already out in England.
Oh, maybe. We're always a little bit behind here.
Yeah. I don't know if it's on HBO or if it'll come to HBO or what the deal is. I don't know if it's out yet. Let me see. Ricky Gervais. Derek. People are saying that they think it's vile, which means I have to watch it.
Right? Yeah, that's the best. That's the best review you could have possibly given that.
So it seems like it's out in England. I mean, people are watching it. Apparently, it's on BBC Channel 4, I think there, but here it might not be here yet. So I don't know if there's a way to watch it in the U.S. yet. Let us know on Twitter. Maybe you guys know. Maybe you're already watching it. We have many astute viewers out there and listeners. So let us know. Let us know on Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter if you know anything about it.
Right on. Hey, now upcoming here on future episodes of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, we could really use your help. We could, because we have got some tremendous guests in the pipeline that we think, a few we know for certain, actually, are going to be speaking with us in the coming weeks, including jazz siren Jane Monheit is coming on the program, as well as, perhaps best known for the song Man in Motion, St. Elmo's Fire, John Parr is coming on the program as well. That one likely to be the revival of our series, Where Are They Now?
Right. Well, that'll be great. It'll be so interesting to talk to these guys.
Where did we ever come up with that title?
I don't know.
So, and there are a ton of others that are kind of slow to percolate up here to the top, I think, but we'll keep you posted. But I think those are going to be the first two out of the pipeline that we're going to get to share with you in the coming weeks, Jane Monheit and John Parr. Now, we kind of talked about this a little bit, and I don't know how serious you are, because to be frank about it, it is an investment of money, perhaps, above an amount we would really pay to have Francis Dunnery come over to our house.
Right.
But the idea is nevertheless really intriguing. Now, we've had a couple weeks to think about this and, you know, to consider his incredible demands in his rider. What are your thoughts on this?
You know, I'm torn. Mm-hmm. I'm torn in two, Mike. On one hand, I really feel like he... first of all, let me just say this. I don't know 25 people. And that's okay. In his rider, right? We'd have to get 25 people. I also don't know that I care... Here's the thing. I don't know that I care enough to sit in a room and hear him play for an hour to 2 hours. Like, I'm not even really a fan of the song that... one of his more popular songs. Mm-hmm. As you are.
Right.
So... you know, I don't know. I have to say, if it was like, if it was like Phil Collins, right? And he's like retired and sort of washed up now, and he's like, you know, not really performing anymore, and this is all he's doing with his life. You know, mm-hmm. I could say, oh, 2 hours, I could hear Invisible Touch. I could hear Against All Odds. You know, there would be like, I could look forward to that evening. I almost wonder it'd be more hassle than it's worth.
Right.
Does that make sense? Like,
well, yeah, of course.
Like, I know what I'd get if I go to a Chikara show, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I know I'd be entertained. I'd get a hot dog. Mm-hmm. I'd perhaps buy a T-shirt. And I might get hit by a flying wrestler in the crotch mm-hmm. as I'm sitting there watching, right? That's an entertaining night. Right. I mean, that'd be an entertaining night. Or just I come there, just get a hit in the crotch. That's all I want. I know what I'd be getting, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if I hired Chikara to come... and I had them build a ring like near my house, and I could get, you know, like 25 people. If I knew 25 people, that would be an entertaining night. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's more hassle than it's worth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I kind of agree with you. You know, I think it's because the same reason he'll come and play at our house is also the reason why it's too much hassle. It's because he's so incredibly marginal, Francis Dunnery.
Right.
We don't really know a whole lot about him. Our affinity for his work is slim to none. You know, right. Like I said, I could prior to maybe 2 weeks ago, I could identify one Francis Dunnery song by name. And it does. I agree with you entirely. Even if you took the money factor out of it, it still seems like it's too much hassle.
Right. Right. If he came mm-hmm. for free. Like, right. If you told me, you know, he's going to come on the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe and tens of thousands of people around the world are going to hear an interview with him, mm-hmm. right? We have a large listenership in Australia. We have a lot of people that listen in England. We have a lot of people that listen in Canada. And, of course, not to mention the United States on this show. I mean, we have tens of thousands of people that listen to this show. Okay. Mm-hmm. So even if he said, hey, you know what, in return for doing the Grizz, which is a nice platform and you're going to get some nice notoriety and people may buy your albums as a result. And he said, you know what, I'll perform at your house for free. I don't know that I'd want him to. Mm-hmm. I'd almost say thank you. That's a nice ancillary benefit. I'll put that on the calendar perhaps. I'll file it, you know, I'll file it away. I just don't know that I would take him mm-hmm. up on it. Because mm-hmm. he would still come with those conditions, right? Mm-hmm. I can't imagine he'd drop his riders for us.
Yeah.
Now, who is an artist who is less marginal? I mean, you see, you brought up a good point. He's marginal. Mm-hmm. Who's less marginal that we would want to have come to the house? Is there someone who's less marginal?
Well, I'll say this. You know, Thomas Dolby does really well for himself.
Right.
And he is quite wealthy. You know, even if his music career had never happened, his contributions to the world of tech and everything else, I don't think he'd need to play
right
in your house or mine. But that's the kind of guy, and part of it is because I really do like his latest album, that if that were even a realistic possibility, even maybe at like a higher price than what, obviously I think Thomas Dolby has greater name recognition than Francis Dunnery, that would be something worth exploring. Mm-hmm. The main problem for you and I is we don't have enough friends to do it.
Right.
You know, like if you think about it, right, let's just say, for example, I don't know, maybe Thomas Dolby would want $5,000. Let's just say that. To do an intimate concert like that, where would we come up with, other than you and I, 48 other friends all willing to pay $100 to attend that?
Right.
I don't know. I don't know how we could accomplish that. But I think it's artists of that size. And that's why – you remember when we talked to Clark Datchler, the frontman of Johnny Hates Jazz, about half a year ago it was now, and they had talked about – now, unfortunately for them, I don't know what's going on. The album that was supposed to be out by now, I guess, has stalled, or they're just, you know, busy with other things. I don't think that the two remaining members of Johnny Hates Jazz, that their chief occupation in life is Johnny Hates Jazz. But if that album had come out, right, didn't Clark tell us he thought it'd be by May when we talked to him?
Yeah, I think it was May, yeah.
Right, like he thought it'd be out by now, and he expected that this summer they would be on a world tour, and none of this has materialized for whatever reason, right? Like they can't distribute it, they can't finish it for whatever reason, something's wrong, who knows? Who knows what the reason is? But to me, I almost think, as opposed to attempting to mount a world tour based on your one hit from 24 years ago, like something like what Francis Dunnery has come up with, is actually an intriguing option, you know, because it is. It's just the two guys. It's Clark and one of the other two original Johnny Hates Jazz guys. And I think that could be done in a very intimate setting. Now, those guys might feel like that's beneath them. But in the age of the internet where independent distribution, I mean, even the Eagles, right? The Eagles are one of the highest selling music acts of all time. And even they are independent, right?
Right.
They are free of record labels. When it's so accessible, I guess, is that what I want to say? Like the barrier for entry has just been removed. When anyone can play the game, and Francis Dunnery is clearly at the opposite end of the spectrum from the Eagles, right? Because that first Eagles' Greatest Hits was like one of the all-time best-selling albums of all time. It's up there with Thriller and Rumors by Fleetwood Mac. They probably don't have a whole lot of greater representation or in terms of like bureaucratic middlemen that interfere than does Francis Dunnery.
Right.
But they're not coming to our house, the Eagles.
Well, let's see. Maybe sans Don Henley, but maybe mm-hmm. we can get the rest of the guys.
I would love – Don Henley's so salty. Like he's so bitter. He's so sarcastic. I would love just like to hang out with him for a couple minutes, like just to get a sense of – I mean it comes through in his music. Like, can you imagine what he must be like in, you know, just regular conversation?
Right, like a whole song about dirty laundry. Like, you know, he's a curmudgeon. You know, it's funny you mentioned the Eagles because yesterday on a drive up here to the mountains, as I've remarked here on the show, it's probably a boring talking point, but one that's been interesting me as of late, which is I've been going through my boxes of CDs, and I realized that maybe about 60% of my CDs have been imported into iTunes over the years. And there's always like a missing, you know, like I want to listen to this and it's just not there, right? Mm-hmm. You know, why I have disc one of Dave Matthews Band live at Luther College, but not disc two put in there. You know, I don't know why. Mm-hmm. So I've been going through and I've methodically been going through my entire CD collection. And then once I'm done, I'm putting them in a large plastic bin that I will seal up and put away in the attic somewhere. So that I'll have every CD digitally now. Anyway, I've been noticing that there was like a ton of stuff I didn't have in there, like the Hell Freezes Over live album. Don Henley's, what is it called? Greatest Miles or A Lot of Miles. What's his greatest hits album called?
Don Henley's?
Yeah, Don Henley's, what is it called? A Lot of Miles or May...
I think you're right about that, but when I imported, I just changed the title to Greatest Hits.
Oh, that's it's interesting. I didn't think to do that.
Right. Anytime that someone gives their greatest hits compilation another name, I just change it to greatest hits when I import it into iTunes. But you're right about that. It's like a lot of miles.
Don Henley. Yeah, greatest. I guess there's two discs now of his. Oh, it's called Actual Miles. So, but anyway, yeah, why would you call it Actual Miles? I don't get that. Whatever. Anyway, so I didn't have that imported. And I forgot, like, that's such a great, such an awesome greatest hits record, isn't it? I mean, it's pretty darn good. You know, you've got some great songs on there. Dirty Laundry, Boys of Summer, All She Wants to Do Is Dance, Sunset Grill. I mean, there's a lot of good solo stuff that he did, you know? And then there's some equally bad stuff. But nevertheless, like, that was on one of those albums I just didn't import and was glad that I found it and put it in there, ripped it and put it in there. And then, like, the Eagles' Greatest Hits, or I'm sorry, Hell Freezes Over, like, there's some great songs on that, right? But then there are some equally annoying songs on that Hell Freezes Over record. But I just discovered it the other
day.
So we were listening to that. I popped it in the CD player, which God knows. I mean, who uses a CD player in their car anymore? You know, these cars, they come with CD players. I'm like, you know, I should take it. I have a CD here. I should bring it with me, and I'll put it in our CD player. Such a novel idea, instead of sticking the iPod on. And we listened to the Hell Freezes Over the live record. I'm like, God, there's some bad songs on here. I didn't remember them being that bad.
Right. I delete that. I import them. I'm like, nope. You know, like, there's one called, like, Pretty Maids in a Row or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, nope, you're done.
Yeah, it's... There, and then, there, of course, some good ones like Tequila Sunrise live on there is fantastic. And so is, you know, so is Hotel California. That's probably the highlight, right? Take It Easy is nice on there. But then there's some other crap on there. So,
no, I really do like that reinvention of Hotel California. And they do a good one of Henley's New York Minute.
Oh, yeah. That's another one. Yeah.
Yeah. There are some really good ones on there. And then some of them are very straightforward, right? Like Take It Easy is exactly like you think it's going to sound. I'm very disappointed. My favorite Eagles song is One of These Nights, which I understood, like, when they reunited, like, they would not play that one every night because the high notes were too hard for Henley to hit. So it wasn't, like, a regular part of the set list anymore. And I was disappointed because I would have loved to have heard a live version of One of These Nights.
What a wimp. You know what I mean? Come on. That's, like, the diva quality you're referring to, though, you know? Can't play this every night because Don just can't hit those high notes. Well, if he took care of his voice and he wasn't like an alcoholic, then maybe he would be all right. Yeah. Get over yourself.
Speaking of, yeah.
That's another one. Get over it.
I do not like that one at all.
You know what it is? It's the, I don't care about your band bickering. Enough that you're going to write a song about it and then, like, it becomes this sort of, I don't know, what, postmodern song, because, you know, it's a song we're singing together again about our breakup and us needing to get over it, so we're back on stage. It's very, like, I don't know. It's sort of sanctimonious, I think, in some ways. I don't know.
Something just weird about the Eagles, you know, that album launched, it was like a mega single. It was number one on adult contemporary charts for a really long time. It did monstrous business. It's one of the highest selling singles of all time, is Love Will Keep Us Alive, which was part of that Hell Freezes Over album.
Oh, yeah. So it was new to that record, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is not an Eagles song. That is a Paul Carrack song. He wrote that for his friend, Timothy B. Schmidt, who's one of the Eagles. And so Paul Carrack, who maybe to us here in the U.S. sometimes plays like the answer to a trivia question. You know, he was the lead singer of Ace for a while, of Squeeze, and alternately with Paul Young of Mike and the Mechanics, but really is only known for Don't Shed a Tear as a solo effort in 1987. I read an interview with him not all that long ago where he basically said even if he had never done anything else in the music industry, he could live comfortably from the royalties from that single.
Wow.
Like, Love Will Keep Us Alive, that did it for Paul Carrack. And I want to share the story. I told the story a few times over the weekend.
Should we pause here and have you do that in a second?
I hate when you interrupt me like this, so no. I'm going to tell you this story right now.
Let's thank one of our show sponsors this week. It's No, go ahead.
So I told the story a couple times over the weekend because this is such like a – the kind of thing people say, I don't know, to me, like in wrestling promos, and it's false. And I'm going to tell you this story right now. Another band that late 70s, early 80s, probably when they had their greatest renown, is Toto.
Africa, most of the time, of course.
Right, Africa and Pamela, Rosanna, Hold the Line was like their first real radio hit in 1978, I think. I'll Be Over You in the mid-80s, typically fronted by lead singer Billy Kimball. But Toto's lineup is like ever-changing. They are mostly studio session players that felt like they could make better albums of their own if they got together than the acts that they were supporting. That was kind of the conceit, I believe, of how Toto came together. And there were a few 80s groups that were like that, where it was kind of like no-name guys, but together they had an awesome sound.
Right, like Traveling Wilburys.
Well, I think those guys, I don't know, it could just be me, but I felt like the Traveling Wilburys were kind of in their own right.
No, there was a guy, Dylan, he wasn't good on his own, and yeah.
Right. Did George Harrison ever do anything? So,
no.
Other than die of cancer. So, I like Toto, but Toto's, and they do tour. Toto was on tour all last summer. Even though I could probably tell you I like 6 Toto songs, and I like them a lot. I don't know that I'd go see Toto if they came around, right?
Right. If they were part of like an 80s revival thing, like a summer concert series where you had like Toto and Wax UK or something, you know what I mean?
I was just listening to Wax yesterday.
Were you?
Oh my God, that's crazy. Yeah, the streaming radio station I have on my Sonos played Bridge to Your Heart by Wax. I couldn't believe it.
What station was this on your Sonos?
On Sonos, you can go to radio stations,
right.
And then by decades, I clicked 80s, and then featured. And the very first one is called Absolute 80s. It's out of the UK.
Cool.
And no sooner was I streaming, I was like, that's Andrew Gold's voice, who we just talked about like an episode ago. And I was like, oh my God, it's Bridge to Your Heart. I couldn't believe it. But
that's cool.
My very, very favorite Michael Jackson song is Human Nature. And because maybe I don't know enough Michael Jackson trivia, to me that's a Michael Jackson song. But that's not a Michael Jackson song. That was put together by Toto. So I saw this interview that I found, I think on YouTube, where Steve Pacallo or whatever, two of the guys from Toto, the guys that did it, told this story. And this to me is like a wrestling nonsense kind of story. They said, yeah, we made this demo of Human Nature, and we were really proud of it. And we thought, you know, it's maybe not right for us. Who do you think would do a good job with this? So we thought, you know, why don't we just call Michael Jackson and ask him if he'll do it? That's like, you know what I mean? Like when you hear this story, like, I don't know how I'm going to defeat you, natural disasters. So I called up my friend the Hulkster. Like, oh, you had Hulk Hogan's phone number, did you?
Right.
Like, oh, Steve, the bassist from Toto, had Michael Jackson's phone number? Like, I don't know that I believe that.
At the height of his popularity.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Remember when that rumor was being floated that there was like an 800 number you could call Michael? And like kids in our neighborhood, like we all talked about it. We're like, oh, I got Michael Jackson's number. And I was crying because like I think my friend Jeb said he had it and I didn't have it. And he was going to call him later. You know? Like, you don't just get Michael Jackson's phone number.
Right.
And there's not like a MySpace page or, you know, like a website back then that you could just go and find it.
Right. Was it like an entertainment industry phone book that only they got? You know, so they could all stay in touch with each other? Like, oh, let's see who we got. If Michael doesn't answer, try Boy George next. Like, no, right. I don't think that's how it worked.
Is Sting there? Give Sting a call.
Yeah. We got this demo. We'd love for you to listen to it. So, yeah, I heard that story and I just laughed. And, of course, you know, he did, you know, Quincy Jones. Famously, Human Nature was the last song for Thriller. And they took a track off of Thriller and replaced it with Human Nature. It was the last song done for that album. It almost didn't make it on the album. And it is. It's hands down my very favorite Michael Jackson song. But I thought that was really interesting. In that same way that like people just think Love Will Keep Us Alive is an Eagles song. That's a Paul Carrack song. And Human Nature is a Toto song.
There's a lot of songs like that, though, historically. I mean, especially even some of the big songs, right? Like when you think about All Along the Watchtower, you think right. of Jimi Hendrix immediately, right? Of course, Bob Dylan fans know, and
right.
most people know that. Well, I don't know that most people know it, but
right,
I think,
but that Dave Matthews wrote that.
Right, right. Right. I mean, most people hopefully know that Bob Dylan wrote All Along the Watchtower. Mm-hmm. You know, it sounds, you know, as Bob Dylan remarked, it's Jimmy's song now, you know, or it was Jimmy's song. Like, it just completely changes, you know, it becomes his song. But there are a lot of songs like that that have been reworked, rewritten, and redone over the years. You know, last night we saw...
Oh, now, before you tell that story, Clayton, maybe we should stop and thank our show's sponsor.
I hate when you do that. No, go ahead. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, actually.
Yeah, see how that works there?
I get interrupted for a living, so go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, that's the downside of working in live television, my friend.
Right.
There's always somebody in your ear. What do they call that thing, by the way, that they put in your ear?
Yeah, it's called an IFB.
And what does that mean?
Let me look it up.
Oh, you don't know?
Well, it's like inter something. What is it called? It has a really... I'm going to look it up. You tell us the sponsor.
It is a technologically ingenious creation, the IFB, as are the inventions of our friends over at Cobra. They're one of the longest standing show sponsors here, and they've been great friends of us here at Grizzly Productions as well. They are the makers of the Cobra iRadar system, which is going to make you a safer and more alert driver. And especially if, like Clayton and I, you travel with little ones in your baby seat or anywhere else, really, you know, if you just scotch tape them to the seat, whatever you do there, you got Velcro, you will want to be as safe and alert out there on the roadways as possible. And the great thing about the Cobra iRadar system is it's giving you up-to-date driving hazard information. So not only does it make you more alert, and then you are more in control of the overall experience, but all those external things out there as well it makes you aware of, so that you can be as prepared as possible for everything that's out there. And the incredible Aura Hazard Database, which gets updated and then re-updated twice a day to make sure that all the information is verified and accurate, is really the teeth in the Cobra iRadar system. Find out more about that, as well as their Cobra tag, their long line of professional GPS navigation, CB radios, marine navigation, and all the other things that Cobra comes up with just to make your life better, over at Cobra.com. Week in and week out, they are changing what's available in the specials section of their website. Two out of the three last times I checked, they had a 2-for-1 deal going on. So you could get something great for yourself and give another one away as a gift. Right on their left-hand navigation there, as you scan down it, you'll see specials. Be sure, when you take a minute going over to see Cobra.com, check in the specials section, watch some of the great, concise demo videos. They will blow you away with their innovation. Our friends and great sponsors at Cobra Electronics await you at Cobra.com.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were in mid-sentence when I interrupted you.
Right. So, by the way, I should mention what an IFB is. You know, it's what it's what on-air talent wear in their ears, and I use talent subjectively. Mm. It's an interruptible feedback device. That's what it's also known as an interruptible foldback, but it's mostly referred to as interruptible foldback or interruptible feedback device. So it's usually a cueing system that producers can then communicate with on-air talent via a microphone inside the booth, etc. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Interesting. Oh, I just see a little news here. Not that you care, but maybe some of our tech fans will. Google's Marissa Mayer. She's a long time one of Google's early, I think, four. She might have been the fourth person there at Google when they first started. She has now been tapped as the head of Yahoo. Yahoo has been doing a CEO search for like 2 years now, and they finally nab someone from Google. Smart move. So anyway, so yeah, the other night we were at dinner at this place. If you come up here to the mountains again, and I hope you do, there's a place, you know, the coffee place that I love, that Cocoon Coffee Company?
I do recall.
They, I guess the husband and wife that own that coffee house also own the Settlers Inn. I think we had dinner there, didn't we?
Oh, yes, and it was excellent.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favorite restaurants, and it's, oh, it's just delicious. So they do all, they're very into, like, locally grown food and supporting, like, local farms and all that sort of stuff. So they're not, their sort of carbon footprint of flying food in from other areas is next to nothing. So they support, like, local community, and the food was, you know, fantastic. And they do, like, a seasonal menu there and stuff, so it's all in keeping with the season. Well, anyway, they have a hotel here as well that they own. Called The Ledges. And I didn't even know where this was. I saw a billboard for it a couple of weeks ago when we were up here. And it's this beautiful hotel built into a waterfall right behind that coffee house. You wouldn't even know it. It's down the hill. You can't see it. So I asked the folks, and they're like, yeah, you have to drive down about, you know, half a mile and come around back up the other side of the mountain. And it's built into a waterfall. And it is as serene as it sounds. So it's
now all your stuff's going to get wet, which is a downside.
Right. So when you bring your suitcase, you got to walk underneath the waterfall, like going into the Bat Cave. But just put it in some Saran wrap, and you'll be fine. They had built the hotel into the side of this hill. Now, it was an old electric facility. back in the day, I guess. So it's been converted and gutted, and so still has the beautiful exterior. And inside is this incredible hotel. And they built a wine bar and a bistro and a whole thing that sort of sticks out, or sort of, what's that famous architect, Andrew Lloyd Wright?
Frank
Lloyd Wright, sorry.
You think of Andrew Lloyd Webber?
I combined the two of them, yeah. It's a Phantom of the Opera architect.
They're known for their blocky architecture and operas.
Right. The guy with a mask. Very Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, like Falling Water, that famous building outside of Pittsburgh, I think it's called. Anyway, that's how it looks. So the outside, like, you sit outside, and there's this bar and bistro, and you can sit outside, and it sort of juts out into the waterfall area. And there's both you can sit underneath like a roof area, and then you can also sit like out on a patio area where they've got umbrellas and stuff. And it is beautiful.
Jesus, sounds really aggravating.
Right. It really is aggravating. It's aggravatingly peaceful. So anyway, they do this thing every Sunday night. This is where we first learned about them. They were handing out a flyer at that coffee shop for Sunday night blues and barbecue. And boy, you would love this. I'll send you a little video I shot of my wife and I there the other night. But boy, three-piece blues band playing Sunday night barbecue and blues music. Playing blues music, and you could eat whatever. You know, they've got a nice menu. You can get whatever you want. You can get your boiled chicken or something else. Mac and cheese. They've got slow-cooked ribs, everything, you know, really good. Pulled pork sandwiches, the whole thing. So, and it was delicious, and they were fantastic. They were playing all kinds of different blues music, some B.B. King. They were playing some John Mayer, and we just had a blast. I'm thinking, these guys are fantastic. And anyway, it reminded me of the Francis Dunnery thing. I'm thinking, you know, I'd much rather go and spend $25 to get some blues, you know, to get some barbecue and have a beer, enjoy this, than pay $1,500 to have some guy come to my house on a Sunday night. So next time you're up here, we got to go and do that.
Yeah, that sounds like a. Hey, I want to throw this out too, and then this is Long in the Tooth Part 4, so we got to get going. But
I have one more thing out of Comic Con I want to get to too. But this is big news, so we'll talk about that. But first,
this is little news. I ate a lot of fast food over the weekend. I had no choice. Roy Rogers has a new chicken barbecue sandwich, and I'm not into Roy Rogers at all.
To be honest, I didn't even know they were still open.
But. Yeah, it either comes with coleslaw on top of the sandwich or without. I know some people are into that. I'm not. I had it without, and the sandwich was excellent. And I couldn't tell you the last time I ate anything fast food ever where I was like, this is excellent. It was really, really good.
What kind of sandwich? Just grilled chicken?
No, it's a chicken barbecue, like pulled chicken, you know, that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was really good.
Do you typically like barbecue? I mean, do you like...
Yeah.
No, I mean, like talking the good Southern barbecue. You know, there's... Mm-hmm. Man, they get really, really fired up about, like, your regions, right? You've got your Georgia barbecue. You've got your barbecue from Tennessee. You've got your, you know... There are all sorts of different ones, right? You've got the rub... Mm-hmm. You got certain sauces, all of them, man. They get really fiery about how long you have to cook it for, like a whole day, you know. So
you know, there's like a traveling thing that comes to like baseball stadiums or whatever. It's like a barbecue fest where it's like people competing against each other, and you pay a price and you walk around and test, you know, you sample all the different food or whatever. A couple years ago, in the early days of Chikara, we were paid to be the entertainment at one of those. And in between our little shows, we just got to walk around and eat all the barbecue we wanted. It was like the greatest – it was one of the greatest days in the history of humanity.
But so you do like the – oh, man, I love the pulled pork barbecue. Just a, you know, pulled pork barbecue plate. You can get the sauce on the side. You just drench it in that. You get the dinner roll. Yeah, mm-hmm. What else do you get with it? You get baked beans. Oh, so good.
All that stuff. All right. Give me the Comic-Con news.
Yeah. Oh, and I should mention there's also a barbecue place that's also owned by that same group of people, but it's like 20 minutes away.
By the mafia.
Apparently. But it's got, you know, incredible barbecue. So when you come up here next time. Anyway, so Comic-Con, I was curious about what we were going to hear about Man of Steel. I don't know if you know much about what happened, but apparently this is sort of like the – it didn't make as much news as it probably should have because they kept it so quiet. And it was such a limited room, and you cannot watch it online, or if you can, it's like a terrible, crappy camcorder version of the first Man of Steel trailer that was released, a two-minute trailer. And they've kept this thing under wraps. I don't know if it's viral, what they're trying to do with this, but apparently this is some of the big news out of Comic-Con, because what you see in some of the journalists who are in the room are saying that this could be the blockbuster of the year next year. And what they said was, even if with the, like, the fuzzy images and video, it may be hard to even understand what you, what you're watching on this little crappy video. So it may not even. And hopefully, we'll see this trailer on the front of Dark Knight.
Right. That's I'm just looking that up.
I'm hoping that we will. So I don't even want to watch it until we see The Dark Knight this week. I don't want to watch this crappy cell phone video. I don't even want to see it. If it's floating around out there, I want to wait and see it in its glory on the screen. Because apparently, at this panel discussion for Man of Steel, there were people in the audience crying. They stood up and gave a standing ovation and applause, and there were sobs in the audience. This from journalists who were in the room. Several reports have indicated that the two-minute-long trailer makes it as it was. The reason, I guess, it was so difficult to shoot, and they smartly did it this way, in the screening room, they shot it on three different screens. So, like, one part played out on one screen, the next part played out on another. So for anyone trying to shoot video of it, it wouldn't have, like, worked, which is kind of a brilliant idea. But apparently, they were freaking out about it. And there was an E! Entertainment reporter in there, Natalie Flynn of E!, said that the trailer got the audience's collective heart pounding faster than a speeding bullet. She said, it looks and sounds amazing. And apparently what surprised most people about the footage was how bleak it was. That Zack Snyder, the director, his aim is making, like, Superman work, and making him cool. The big challenge is if you can make people feel, what would you do if you were Superman? How would you feel? In the past, he's been a big blue Boy Scout on a throne. Ultimately, he decided to act as if no Superman film had been made before. That's the goal of this. But apparently, people in the theater felt that it had struck the right balance between sort of grand spectacle and this, like, sort of human connection story to Superman that we've not seen before on the silver screen. So, hey, bravo to Zack Snyder. If he got a whole room to stand up and give a rousing applause line, you know, a rousing applause for a trailer, I can only imagine how much you and I are going to freak out on Friday when we see it.
Right. Now, I looked all over, and there is nothing online confirming that it's going to be shown with The Dark Knight. But we can hold out hope, and we'll tell you all about that and everything else that's happened since when we get back together next week for another edition of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
See you, everyone.
Bye.